It's been organic since 1948. The spring of 1949 was really when we started to make a change.
Was this your idea? Because this was your parents' farm at the time, wasn't it?
What happened was my father was farming this farm. In the autumn of 48, he sent me to college in Glasgow, and they had then the sort of thing that, what a contrast with now, a thing called the Farmer's Course.
Right.
And you went in October and you finished in April.
Right.
And it was designed specifically for farmers' sons. It was in Glasgow, and they asked me, you've got to find digs. They send you a great long list of landladies who
So you can rent a room.
So I tried Mrs. Campbell, and Mrs. Campbell said yes, she could take me at £3.13 a week, and would I mind sharing with another college student? And I said no, I didn't mind. So I was tipped in with this college student, who was a boy from south of Scotland, and I walked into the bedroom when he was already there and put my case on the bed, and he said, we were introduced, and then he said, what's a truly fertile farm? And I was a bit taken aback. I thought, you know, I hadn't even met this bloke, I only just know his name. And I said, well, it's a farm capable of growing good crops. No, it isn't, he said. It's a farm farmed without fertilizers and getting a return. And I was a bit taken aback by this. But anyway, he then produced a book, and it was a very famous book. It became a very famous book. It was called Humus and the Farmer by a fellow called Friend Sykes. It became very famous, I'm talking about 70 years ago. He said not only is it a really interesting book, he said, but you ought to read it. It'd do you good to read it. So anyway, I did read it. He gave it to me and he read it, and I was extremely impressed by it. And Friend Sykes was an organic farmer, and he did it because he bred racehorses. And he found that the food was better for his racehorses.
Right.
That was the basis of it. Anyway, I was intrigued by this. And in, November, I think, we had a weekend where we were allowed to go home. And I brought this book down and gave it to my father and said, hey, read this.
And what was his reaction to...
Well, he was fascinated by it. He was fascinated by this book. And he made it his business to find out much more about it. The Soil Association, of whom you may have heard, was launched in 45. Just at the end of the war, they started up this thing called the Soil Association. And it was started by a lady called Lady Balfour. A very, very enthusiastic lady. And my father made a contact with her. It started up a friendship that went on for years. And in fact, she was president of the Soil Association. My father became vice president of the Soil Association.
Right.
So it was time after when he got interested in this. That started off the interest, really.
When you had a chat with your father about this book and whether it's something you should apply to this farm, was there any pushing against it, or was he full on board with it?
He was extremely fascinated by it. And the reason why he was interested in it was that we'd had a problem with our cows.
Right.
We were a dairy farm
here,
and we'd had a problem with fertility with the cows. The vets came in, and they took all sorts of tests and things, and they eventually found out why we were having trouble with the cows, and they said that it was delayed ovulation was our problem. They said, we've found out what that is, but we've no idea what you have to do to...
Undo it, okay.
And it that just came at that same moment, really. And Father thought, is it fundamental? Is it that we're feeding them wrong? So we started looking at...
I can remember us using nitro chalk, sulphate of ammonia. I think we were more or less doing what the locals were doing.
Yeah.
You know, I think we were much of a pattern. I can remember being sent to spread the stuff. it sparked off thought. And then we came across one or two other people who were doing it. And there was a chap up in Northumberland, Sanderson. He certainly was that way inclined. I can't remember whether he had gone the whole hog or not.
Right, okay.
So we thought we'd give it a go. And I remember in the spring of 49, the one field, the Harmer Hill field, got fertiliser and nothing else did.
Right, so it's like a test field.
Yes. That got fertiliser and the others didn't. Over the next few years, I haven't got accurate figures of yields, but we suffered a loss of yield. It became a conviction.
Right.
That this was the right way to go about it and that we just had to find a way of making it work. And that is what happened.
Back in the sort of late 40s when you were doing this, this was a new concept of farming, wasn't it, in a way?
Well, it was. And the important thing to us was that, in fact, we didn't get any premium. Once it became known as a system and the product was respected, perhaps we say, then we started getting a premium on some of our products. But it was several years before we got any premium.
At what stage do you think the general public knew the difference between an organic farm and a non-organic farm?
Ooh, that's a difficult one. I honestly don't know. From an early stage, there was a great interest in what we were doing. I mean, some people thought we were totally crackers, including the man who later became my father-in-law.
Right.
He thought I was totally crackers. We had a big interest in that we got a lot of people round as on farm visits.
Right, okay, just having a look at what you were doing.
Look at what we're doing, exactly.
In those early years of doing it, were there ever any doubts that you were doing the right thing and whether should revert back?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, one had one's doubts and one thought, gosh, there has got to be easier ways of doing it. Because not only were we not using fertiliser, but of course we weren't using sprays. The fact that you weren't using sprays meant that you were dirtier.
Yeah, yeah.
That did make you look round and think, oh, gosh, are we right to be doing this? But I'm glad to say we had sufficient conviction.
When you look at where the farm is now and how it's diversified and the oats and the fact that there are couples getting married in your back garden on a regular basis, it's interesting to see how farms have to diversify, isn't it?
Yes, we have. It rests with the farmer. I went into organic agriculture with my father, together with him, and the two of us doing it together. But I think a very, very important thing was, unfortunately, we lost our boy in the motor car. It became, after a couple of years, Ginny rang me up from London, where she was working, and said, I'm coming home. I want it kept.
Right. So she wanted to carry on the family dynasty.
I had never once suggested to Ginny that she should take on the responsibility of this farm, because it was a big thing to do. That was, I just didn't say, one of the great moments of my life when she said that. What I can say now is that once she took it over, she's made a better job than I did.
Which is all you can hope for, isn't it?
Well, exactly. The one thing you touched on just now, you said that we have weddings and things here. Mm-hmm. These are all the responsibility of Ginny.
Yeah. It's seeing the opportunity of the moment. So for you, as a 19-year-old reading a book, you saw something that could affect the future of the farm, showed the book to your father, and now Ginny's generation has seen opportunities for the farm. And that, imagine if you could tell your father what she would do with the farm, what his reaction would be.
Yes, exactly. I did say to Ginny, when she said she'd like to take over, I did say to her, now look here, you're taking over the farm from such and such a date.
Yeah.
And your grandfather and your father farmed it this way, but it is not your responsibility to do that. You are in charge and you will do what you want.
Yeah.
And if you want to put fertilizer all over the place tomorrow, you can do so. And she said, no, Dad, I want to go on with it.
It's interesting now, isn't it, that one of the USPs of what this farm is, it now has, particularly with its porridge oats, are known around the country, around the world.
Yes, it was fairly shortly after we went organic, we said to one another, you know, here we are producing things that we think are more valuable, not eating it ourselves.
So you were still going to the co-op to get your food.
Exactly. It was at that stage that we bought a little stone mill, and that was really purely to grind for the house. And we wanted to have our own flour. I was a member of a local motor club, and my navigator was a grocer from Wem.
Right, okay.
And he said, we were talking during some rally or function. I got on very well with him. T.O. Williams is of Wem. They were very well known. He said, oh, I'd like to try some of that flour in my bakehouse. And
right.
He had it for years and years.
And this is how things start, isn't it? It's people you know. This all came about because you ended up rooming with somebody you'd never met.
That's right. Sheer chance.
Yeah.